So I want to make a few informal remarks, and then you're welcome to ask questions later. So I, as I said, there is for the spin easing model there is a similar yet different proof. So maybe I'll just say what would be set up there, and just we'll see how one gets this sort of funny weight, complex weight per cycle. What are the combinatorial reasons for getting precisely some weight per cycle, and where the in-house weights arise. So before we do that, I just want to remind that what we had, the observable we had in the random cluster case, that it was it was a probability with sign that interface passes through Z. So apparently that this f of Z, it was converging in the limit to the derivative of the conformal map phi to a horizontal strip. So it was converging to phi prime of Z to some power sigma, sigma being, so here one has to normalize by the lattice mesh to the power sigma, and sigma was, what was it, 8 over kappa minus 1, I think. So it's in a different place, yeah. 8 over kappa minus 1. So this works for easing model for kappa equals 16 over 3, and I would it also works for uniform spanning tree for kappa equals 8 and sigma equals 0, so one has logarithm here, and conjecturally this thing should work for all the models. So for the O of N case, so I will come to the discrete construction in 5 minutes, the observable leads to a different conformal invariant or covariant. So we take a map of this thing with two marked points to a half plane, but such a map that the point A from which we grow our interface goes to infinity. So B goes here. So and let's denote it, say, by psi. And then there will be F, well, maybe G of Z, which will converge again if we normalize it properly to psi prime of Z to the power sigma. Now with this, so I define a conformal invariant. So we'll have a conformal invariant depending on this configuration A, Z, and B. And here, there is a unique map which maps this to a horizontal strip up to shift. So the derivative is uniquely defined, so this is a conformal invariant. So here there is a unique map which maps it to inverted half plane, unique up to multiplication by a number.
And if you slide a curve between A and B.
We will eventually grow a curve between A and B. Yeah, so here there is no curve up to now. To get this function g of z, it will be defined as probability of z belonging to some curve. So now I'm just claiming that this following function is written here. It's conformally covariant.
Wait, so which comes divided by?
So just to normalize, because otherwise here there is this, you can shrink or stretch everything. So we assume the domain is smooth near the target point B, so that makes sense. And here the same thing happens, that if we're able to find such a thing in a discrete model which would converge to this, it actually solves a very similar boundary value problem as to the first case. Then, and this is a martingale, we can run this martingale expansion trick, and we get that our curve is a SLE, and the relation between sigma and kappa is slightly different. So the relation is that sigma is equal to, I think I have it on a different piece of paper, sigma is equal to 3 over kappa minus 1 half. So for easing, kappa will be equal to 3, so we get 3 over 3 minus 1 half, you still get 1 half. Okay, so this is just it will be a slightly different function than what we were discussing here. Now, how do we define this function in the discrete case? So again, the model is the following, that we have loops on hexagonal lattice, and the weight of a partition function is the sum over all configurations of n to the power number of loops, x to the power length of loops. Actually, what happens here is that, as I said, it can probably be generalized. I haven't checked out all the details, but probably it works for a number of trivial end graphs. The reason why we start with hexagonal lattice, so why we want trivial end graph, is that unlike the previous case, if we have, say, valency 4, then we might get pictures of that sort, and then there is some ambiguity about how to sort of split this into loops. In the previous ones, it just came with the model. It becomes problematic for n not equal 1. For n equal 1, when there is no weight per loop, it's still okay. So actually what I'm saying now about easing model on the hexagonal lattice, it works for easing model on square lattice, and actually leads to exactly the same definition of a discrete homomorphic function as yesterday. It leads to different discrete homomorphic function, but the definition of discrete homomorphy and lemmas you have to prove are exactly the same, so we can reuse some of them. Okay, now here is the definition of the function g of z. So what we do, the previous time we looked at the perimeters which ran from A to B passing through Z. So now we inverted 1/2 of it. So it was like the height function having a plus 2 monodromy here. So now we ask for height function to have plus 1 monodromy. So there is one perimeter which runs from A to Z. But then we stop. There is no continuation. So this is, we look at the partition function for this thing. So basically, you cannot write any more g of z as a probability of some event in the original model where the curve goes all the way to b. So you write just g of z as a sum, well, say, partition function for this thing. So it's the sum over all possible configurations. And then there is the same weight, n to the power number of loops, x to the power the length of loops and the curve. And then there is a complex weight which depends on the winding of this curve. So there is complex weight which is the exponent of I, then some coefficient, so we'll figure it out in a second, times this curve. So let me just define L times the winding of this curve, gamma. Okay. So now I'll just start trying to prove that this thing is discrete homomorphic. And on the way, we'll be naturally led to the choice of L and the choice of X. So we'll just see that there is only one choice of L and two choices of X where we can start the proof going. That depends on A and Z, but then when you start doing the Markov property and Martingale trick, you should somehow normalize this. So usually you normalize it near what would be the value near B, and the B enters in normalization. So it's like this SLE kappa ROS, kappa minus 6 to be exact, which sort of they aim at B but stop at Z, this sort of thing. So B, at this point, B doesn't enter. It will enter later. So we indeed will be studying SLE from A to B, which suddenly stopped in the middle.
So here, it's no longer so obvious that this should be a martingale, am I right?
No, it is obvious that it is a martingale, because if you draw,
it's a path that ends at one place, right?
No, but it's a martingale in the sense that if you draw this piece, then it is a martingale. Well, it's.
well, I don't see why.
Be- Well, okay, as I said, for martingale property, you need to introduce some normalization at point B.
When you get to B, it's going to be zero.
Not exactly. Well, okay, you stop one step of B. No, it's not going to be zero. It's going to be a real number, which is non-zero. So basically, what you do? I would first worry about the question why this thing is discrete homomorphic. But then what you do? So the thing which is martingale is G of B is a martingale. Do you agree with that?
G of B. Some.
Well, okay, properly normalized.
G of B isn't a constant?
No, not with this definition. Well, this is constant, but it's just partition function. G of B is just partition function for the original model.
There's some difference probably, right? When it goes through Z, you need still this indicator function probably, right?
This,
you have the condition to go through Z.
No, it's not condition to go, it ends at Z.
But
no.
He still has a condition for that, right?
Yeah. No, but it ends at Z. It's not the original model, so if...
The difference between this and last time is this path is not...
It doesn't go all the way to B.
Right.
It's not the original, so it's the better analogy is, like, here we consider partition function with a plus 2 monodromate Z, here we consider partition function with plus 1 monodromate Z, so this curve, it starts at A, but it leads to Z.
Yeah, but in terms of, so if I think in terms of SLE, is it radial SLE then, or?
No, because we will normalize it later when we start doing Markov property. We will normalize it, and martingale property will normalize it at B. So it will be this SLE kappa minus 6, so to say. So it will be Hordov SLE in the end. But if you write it as a radial SLE, then it will be SLE kappa rho.
But then you have some factor about probably getting from Z to B.
Well, okay, strictly speaking, you see there is a ratio here. Strictly speaking, the martingale will be the ratio of this thing at Z and at B. But maybe I think that's not the main point why this is martingale. The main point is how we calculate this thing, and then the other thing is not difficult. But well, say at B it's just the partition function. If you write G of B, it's just the partition function of our model. And...
Well, let's see, if you look at it, but that gets changed every time once you know more of the path. But then you're dividing by something.
Well, okay. So this function... Well, okay, let me just leave it at this
if
claim.
If you're dividing by G of B, then it's trivially marginal, right? Because it's always 1.
Yes. Yes.
Normalize.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. That's good. So I agree with Samantha at that point. And then the others, I guess, you just have to verify it step by step.
Yes.
Calculation
that
we'll do later.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I won't do later. But not today. Okay. So let's maybe discuss why it is. Why it satisfies this boundary value problem and why it is discrete homomorphic. So how do we prove that something is discrete homomorphic? We need some sort of a linear relation. So before, basically, the linear relation we had two things which we could do. We could slide Z left and right on this interface, and we could attach some loops to this interface. So here, loops generally don't touch each other because there is only one loop passing through a vertex at most. So we can't attach loops, so the only thing we can do, we can grow this curve or we can shorten this curve. And if we start growing it, it might bump into a loop, and then we have some decisions to make as to how we attach this loop. So this is the relation we might want to get. So for now the function will be defined not at vertices, but for every vertex. If there is a vertex Z, there are three possible ways to arrive at Z. So we will just define separately three functions. So let's say we somehow look at a finer lattice. So for this point Z, there are three points Z1, Z2, Z3. And we will just define function G of Z1, G of Z2, G of Z3. And G of Z will be just the average of those three values for arriving from three different points. And actually, for those of you who know The dimer models, there is a bijection between spin easing model on, say, faces of hexagonal lattice and dimer model on this graph. It's one of these Fisher lattices. And essentially, if you run the usual arguments of Kenyon about dimer models, but on this graph, this function g of z1 will be exactly, well, his Castellan determinant when you remove z1 from the graph. So you see there will be also a third function which will appear if we remove the central point, but we'll come to this in a moment. But if you don't know this, then it doesn't really matter for our exposition.
When you have three functions calling them z1, z2, z3, instead of having gi, let's say, of z, and I varying in...
Well, okay.
But it's a question.
No, I don't know.
No,
there is no reason whatsoever. Okay. Well, because on Fisher lattice there are actually three different points there. Or four different points. Okay, so...
Yesterday it was east, south, west. Mm-hmm. But there aren't letters for these two directions, so...
Well, yeah, presumably in some country they would have three sort of sides on a compass, and they would call them some letters, I don't know, A, B, and Q, whatever, or A, Q, and Y, whatever. So so basically we now have three, well, if V is number of vertices, we have three numbers per vertex, so we have three times V number of numbers, and we want to get the same number of relations for them. So what sort of relations we can write? So suppose that we have this curve which arrived at z from one of these two edges which are on the left. So we have this sort of a picture, or we have that picture. Then what we can do in either of those two cases, we can just add this edge. So this is sort of a relation which gives us a bijection between these configurations. Well, and that's basically the same. So here it would be, let's say, if those two points were z, z, and y, so there were two functions of that, so this would be contribution to g2 of z, and this would be contribution to g3 of z. And on the right, we would have contributions to the same function for y. Well, I don't know how, let's say, it's direction 1, so it's g1 of y. So, and the thing which happens here is, well, there are actually two things which happen. First, we added an edge. So if weight here was, let's say, suppose that weight of this configuration, one of those configurations, is x, then what would be the weight of this configuration? Well, maybe it's best to go from left to right. So if the weight here was x, then the weight of this one would be x times x small, because we added one edge and we have a factor of x because of that. But there is also a complex weight because our loop has turned left. So in this case it turned left. So let's just write that this complex weight is lambda per 60 degree turn. So lambda to the power 6 is the complex weight for the full turn. So here is x lambda, and here the same thing would be if this had weight or whatever, I don't know, y, then that would be y x lambda bar. Okay. So there is one tricky point here, that if on the left we just arrived to z and everything was nice, when we add one edge, we can accidentally bump into a cycle. And then we have illegal configuration. So there is also a third possibility that we here bump into a cycle. And there are actually a few different possibilities, because we can bump into a cycle, we can bump into the path of our curve. And there should be a universal, because we don't know that, which there should be a universal way of dealing with this. So there are, the sort of first problem. So how to deal with this in a universal way. So, and this is what corresponds, if you do this dimer approach, what corresponds to this fourth function. So suppose that we just have this picture where there is a curve from A, which arrives at some point, and there is a loop attached to it. So there is there are several ways how to legalize this thing. So one way is just you have a curve arriving from here, and then there is a cycle. Then there is a curve which goes clockwise, and there is a curve which goes counterclockwise. And if, for example, this has weight, let's say x times weight of this cycle, then this would have weight x times, we should count how many turns we made. So that would be, we started like that, we made one left turn and one, two, three, four, five right turns. So x lambda bar to the power 5 minus 1, it's 4. And here the same thing, lambda to the power 4. Okay. And sort of an immediate thing, which an immediate suggestion which would simplify the things is that one should have lambda to the power 4 plus lambda bar to the power 4 plus n equal to 0. Because that would mean that if we just have this unoriented picture, then the possible orientations, they sum up to 0. So this picture is not important when we start averaging our relation over some area. Because I immediately want to say that when we start showing convergence of our discrete homomorphic function to a usual homomorphic function, of course we don't do Cauchy-Riemann relations, but instead we do contour integrals. And to show that contour integrals are zero, we will average Cauchy-Riemann relations over some area. So we will average this relation over all possible oriented edges. So this term, this additional term for this vertex, we'll get from all three possible directions. Let's say with coefficients 1, 1, 1. And then we want these things to sum up to zero, and then it means that this extra term won't be important in the bulk.
So what is the force power? How many turns in the
You should count how many, you should compare these two pictures and how many turns are there. So because there is this turn of minus, plus 1,
yes.
Minus 1, minus
right.
1.
Yes, sir. Yes. Yeah. Thanks.
With 1 being 60 degrees. So that's the first suggestion, and n is twice cosine theta, naught. So basically we get that lambda to the power 4 plus lambda bar to the power 4 plus e to the power I theta naught plus e to the power minus I theta naught should be 0. So basically lambda to the power 4 is minus e to the power I theta naught, or e to the power I pi plus theta naught, something like that. So lambda is e to the power I pi plus theta naught over 4. Something like this. There is some freedom also you can add to, you can add pi or something. So this is a choice of a weight per 60 degrees, and of course per 360 degrees you get this to the power 6, so you get exponent of I 3/2 of pi plus theta naught. So you get this. This should be, this is how the curve is weighted.
You have eight solutions for
Well, the thing is that first of all, what happens is that there are eight solutions O and O, and then first of all, this is halved because two of them, they lead to exactly the same thing, so there are only four solutions. Then there are two regimes, and one works better for one for another, so there are only two solutions, and one of them leads to analytic function, another to anti-analytic function. So they all account, there are no extra things I'm saving for the future, so that's... Of course, from the very beginning, there are some other arguments why this weight should be this, but it's combinatorially, we just come logically to it. Okay. And now, suppose that we continue doing this sort of an averaging process, and so we want to sum Cauchy-Riemann relations over some area, and as a result, get that contour integral of our function is equal to zero. So, for example, how this is done on the square lattice. On the square lattice, we have this relation that such difference is equal to the orthogonal difference. If we sum this relation over some area, then we get a picture of this sort, that each arrow is, so the single arrow is the difference of real parts and double arrow is the difference of imaginary parts. If we sum it over the area, there is this telescoping rule, so everything cancels out, and we get that the sum of real parts on the top of our box minus real parts on the bottom of our box plus imaginary parts on the right side of our box minus imaginary parts on the left side of the box is equal to zero. So it basically says that contour integral of our function is zero, because we integrate real part here and we integrate imaginary part there. So we want to have here some similar phenomena, that we average this Cauchy-Riemann relation over an area and we get some contour integral out of it. So let's just before thinking of really what is an analytic object, try to average this relation and see whether we get whether or not we get that it all cancels out in the bulk and there are only terms in the middle. Let's look at small piece of the lattice. So for every oriented edge, there is a relation which amounts to adding this edge. Now let us have a look, for example, at a function, g1 of z. So it's a function which lives at this point. From which relations we can get this function. So first I assume that all relations are summed with the same coefficient 1. There is some freedom in choosing coefficients, but it doesn't really help you any. So from which relations we get this function? Well, first of all, we get it from a relation which corresponds to adding this h, because then this function is on the right, and then this function is with the weight proportional to x. Maybe I actually should move this lambda bar and to the left. Maybe it's better to move it here for uniformity. Okay. So then from this edge relation, we get this function with the weight x. Then also there is this edge relation. When we add this edge on the left-hand side, when we remove it, we have that function and that function. And the weights are lambda and lambda bar. So, and since the relation is A is equal to B, so it's better to write A minus B is equal to 0. So we get minus lambda. And then when we have this edge and we cut it off, then this enters with the weight lambda bar. So if we average Cauchy-Riemann relations over some area, then function at some point will enter with this coefficient. And of course we want this coefficient to be 0, because we only want to have some sort of a contour integral being 0, so we don't want to have anything in the bulk. So this is the relation which we want to have for x. Okay? So the relation is that x is equal to lambda plus lambda bar. Now we have figured out lambda somewhere here. So x is twice the cosine of this guy. Something like that. I'm not completely sure, because I wasn't looking at my notes. I'm not completely sure that out of 8 possible answers I took the correct one, but that there is a good likelihood it's at least 12.5%. So we get this formula for x. And we know that n is equal to twice cosine theta 0. So if you solve this in x, then you get the Niehaus numbers. So you essentially need only to use the formula for cosine of 1/2 of the angle. Maybe I should look at my notes.
Can we back up just a little bit?
Yeah, sure.
So you made sort of an ansatz, or it would be nice if these things cancel right here on this board.
Yeah, just a second. Maybe so that you have things on record, I can write the correct values of lambda, which I have in my notes. So the correct values of lambda would be it's actually pretty close. So that's so there are, as we said, there are different choices. So the things which would work better are pi minus thrice theta. Yeah, I think that's it. Pi minus thrice theta over 4. Yeah. Sorry?
Why does that satisfy the equation above?
Why doesn't satisfy equation above? Well, maybe we'll just leave it as is. So it's no, but because here we need either lambda to the power 4, lambda bar to the power 4 being equal to that.
Yes, but it's
well, plus minus, okay.
Plus or minus.
Plus minus. Because there is also a question what will lead to analytic functions and what will lead to anti-analytic functions. Yeah, okay. Okay, so I made basically there is a thing that there is only one local rearrangement which we can make in this model, and this is adding an oriented edge. So for every oriented edge there is a rearrangement. So basically there are three oriented edge per vertex, so there are thrice number of vertices rearrangements, and we have thrice number of vertices functions, and we want somehow to show that indeed this characterizes our functions completely. Then one problem is that we get this extra function when we start doing this rearrangement. So we want it to cancel out. And this immediately leads to the choice of the complex weight. And then the second thing is we want indeed to have some sort of a linear relation which when we average it over an area, it will lead to some, so in the middle of the domain everything will disappear and we'll have some sum along the contour, which would correspond to contour integral being equal to zero. And for that, we already have to work with these original functions. And for example, a function at a given point, we can get from three different relations corresponding to this edge, that edge, or that edge. And the weights will be lambda and lambda bar. So we need some relation on that. And it turns out that this is exactly, this can be satisfied either if x is the Niehaus weight, or if it's this dual weight, which is in the middle of the other critical interval.
So, there's still something I'm confused about. So, this observable, it only counts if z is right at the tip?
Yes.
So,
yes.
It's zero everywhere else?
No, because every point can be a tip. So f of z...
The configurations that contribute to the value at z...
Are only configurations where it goes to, yes. It's different with the previous case, because in the previous case, for every configuration, in some sense, contributed to all points along it. And we got a function which, in some sense, already was half as good. And then we have to, while averaging, we were getting a function which was even better.
So when you look at these extensions, the extension contributes, I mean, if the path stopped, z contributes one thing.
And the extension contributes to two neighbors of z. Yes, to z it contributes zero, but it contributes to two neighbors of z. Yes, yeah, yes. So basically, the relation here is that if
two neighbors of z, if
well, okay. So basically, the relation is like that. Well, okay. So let me denote those points. I don't know, a, b, c, and. X, Y, Z, and the middles, let's say D and U. So basically the relation is that G of A times lambda bar plus G of B times lambda is equal to G of X times X plus G of U times X, where G, A, B, and X, they are these functions we discussed, and G of U is just this function center point is that probability of having this configuration with a funny loop.
Just tell me one path and tell me what it contributes.
For example, path which goes like this contributes to g of x only.
Okay, so you only contribute to one of the three.
Yes, yeah.
And if it had stopped early, it would be g of a.
Yeah, any given configuration contributes only to one of the four.
One of the things.
Only to one thing.
And how do you contribute to the middle one?
Well, the middle one, it's this configuration contributes to the middle one when you have a loop here, when with this not perfectly legal configuration where there are three perimeters coming into this point.
But that doesn't contribute to y.
No, that doesn't contribute to y.
I see. So it's only for the center.
Yeah. This is exactly, it takes about 1 day and a half to check, but those are exactly the weights you get if you write Castellan matrix for the Fisher lattice. Uh-huh. But you have to write this,
this
huge determinants. But those are exactly the same weights.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So it's so if you do dimers on this thing, I don't know it's how well known is that, but there is if I draw this lattice. So suppose that we have some Ising model configuration, for example, well, this sort of configuration. Then what we do, we draw on this lattice, on this Fisher lattice, dimer configuration, which has long dimers only if they would separate in our picture opposite spins. And then we have to complement them by small dimers. And there is almost a bijection between dimers on this Fisher lattice and Ising configurations.
If
you do Kenyon science for that, then you get exactly the same function.
So how is what you're doing different from what Rick and Odette? I mean, they did exactly the same as what you did, or is it?
I don't. Well, I think they do exactly the same, only they can't control the limiting behavior.
I see.
But that would be my conjecture, because Rick and I wrote similar things a number of years ago, and the only problem is we couldn't control limiting behavior. It's very easy to control if domain has, on a large scale, has piecewise linear boundaries. Say, in half plane, it's very easy, because part of the... So you have Dirichlet-Neumann boundary conditions, so that's... I never understood why Rick never wrote it up. And this is why I never wrote it up, because I wanted arbitrary boundary. But if you ask question not about convergence to SLE, but if you ask question about, say, spin pair correlations in a nice domain, then still it yields a new result which was not in the literature before, even for a nice domain.
Let's see.
But also I sort of find that it's nicer to think of geometric picture rather than of the Castellan determinants. So I can think of Castellan determinants, but it's easier to explain geometric picture to most people than to explain Castellan determinants.
But the Castellan determinants, you have some similar set of relations.
It's exactly this. It's basically the relation in Castellan determinant language. That's this relation of adding this H is basically the relation that you... So the relation is that it's the relation given by this point. So you take, let's say you assume that one of the neighbors of this point is vacated, and then you flip the edge coming to this point to this vacated neighbor. So you get the relation of a function sampled at four neighbors. So that's what you get. Because in this Castellan matrix, so it's here graph of valency four, so in every row there are four elements, non-zero elements, and that's the relation there.
That's
okay. And one can spend some time, I think, I don't know, maybe for Rick it should be obvious what is the weight in geometric terms, but for other people it requires calculations to see that it's that.
Right, so but you have a trick for dealing with the boundary.
Yeah, that's sort of.
Uh-huh.
No, I don't know, maybe have something else they don't have. Well, at least here it's more clear what you're actually doing. There it's different language, but there of course is amorphic. Okay. Yes.
I'm trying to understand that formula by the end there. Why is it you have to pick up x inverse powers for removing links?
I could have screwed it up here because wait a second. Right, I think I'm right. Well, if one does it correctly, then one gets this Niehaus number, square root of 2, plus minus square root of 2. By 1 unit, yeah.
So we have an example. Well, like I said, if you get to that point Z by either removing one of the pair of arrows going away,
Now I already forgot about the arguments. I'm only summing these relations. I'm only summing those relations.
Okay.
And they all summed with the same coefficient 1. And then I asked what would be coefficient of g of z if this summed 4 wedges with 1. And g of z, of course, will enter thrice because it can occupy 3 different positions in our relations. And the coefficients with which it will enter will be x, lambda bar, and lambda, or rather, minus lambda bar and minus lambda, because that's the relation. It's equal to 0.
Okay.
So, after that, what happens is that you get some contour integral. But what happens is that unless n is equal to 1, you can't make sense of it as a contour integral of some analytic function. You get, you don't get enough information. But if n, because it's sort of a skewed integral of analytic function, you have bigger weight for imaginary part than for real part, and things go a little bit wrong. And if n is equal to 1, when you do this, you get exactly contour integral of this function g of z, being equal to 0, and you can conclude that this function is real holomorphic. And again, like in previous case, if z is on the boundary, you know exactly what the argument is, because there is only one direction from which you can arrive to the boundary point. So exactly the same thing you can do on the square lattice for Ising model, and then it leads to the same definition of holomorphic functions as before. So if you do it, if you compare it with the Fisher lattice, then it will be sort of such picture. And again, there are 4 functions per vertex. Actually, that's one more difference. Rick actually likes another Fisher lattice. He likes this lattice more, I think, but I like that one because it's symmetric, and he likes this one because it's planar. And you get 4 functions per vertex, and it turns out that the thing which we were doing yesterday, it was done on the medial lattice. So and the medial lattice would be that lattice. So and there, if you remember, we had each function had these 4 values at a point. So it turns out that the definition of holomorphic for this function would be the same as for the other one if we just identify value here and value there. So it would be the same definition of holomorphy. So one can reuse all the lemmas from there. But I don't want to get more into it. So it's okay, so this is just some remark on what one does for the spin models. And it may be.
So does that mean that you can get the critical values of x for the AOM model on the square lattice?
No, because it doesn't work for square lattice for n not equal to 1, because there is this ambiguity as to what if you have this spin picture, there is an ambiguity how you draw perimeters.
Yes. Okay. But
you get square. You get values, but for not exactly this the usual O of n model.
Yeah, it's a different model, but you can get the values of x with this.
Probably yes, but I never thought because it's a bit funny model because you have so you solve this ambiguity not in the usual way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Probably you can. I don't.
I mean, it's still an interesting model. For example, with Sankar's theorem.
I don't know. So what more should I say? I can say also a little bit what happens with the yesterday argument if one does it, for example, on a Riemann surface.
Well, maybe see if you can. Is there an elementary proof that this is a martingale? This thing.
No, I think you have to do it by. Wait a minute, a second. No, I think you have to do it by induction. I don't have an easy Hedwig explanation.
You need a more precise statement of what the martingale
is. Let me see. The limit.
What's the process?
Well.
No, it's just this.
Well, okay. I think I'll Okay. I'll give you an easy explanation what is a martingale. So we run, let us run SLE towards Z. With this complex weight and sample the thing at B, then it will be a martingale. So we run the curve towards Z, and then sample this thing at B, divided by its thing at Z, then it will be a martingale. So G of Z over G of B. Sorry.
Oh.
You're running SLE.
Oh, okay. Let me see. So what would be a good? If for example we look at this non-probability measure, which defines a curve from A to Z, and it's mildly non-probability measure because basically if from to Z we can come, well, we can even assume that we came from a given direction to Z, and then there are only two possible ways to only two possible signs, plus or minus, for using model to get with this direction. Then the value of this, what would be a good thing? No, I'm not sure I have a one. No, maybe after all I don't have an easy explanation which doesn't go through induction and unwinding the curve.
I mean, okay, but this may be good or not, but one possibility is you have the path which at some particular time is that thing from A to Z. And you're asking what's the weight of the configuration given that path so far? Look at the sum of all configurations.
It's not exactly that, because here we don't we a priori we might have no place to plot the path further all the way to B.
But there has to be a random path some function on a random path.
Well, okay. If you really want easy to define martingale, then what we can do we can introduce some non-trivial conformal models. So, for example, we put, let me think, we put two points C and B here, and we do one more curve from C to B. Then we do exactly the same configuration, and then we have a function with A, Z, B, and C as parameters. And that would behave, I think, that would do the job for the martingale trick and easier than this one.
What?
Because
we really understand less than we think we understand. In order to do a martingale, whether they're discrete or continuous model, we have to take a step according to some process.
Yes. Yeah.
And then compute some function based on that. Okay.
But here basically it's sort of, as I'm saying, it's not I think you understand, because Scott already said that you can have sort of by induction a proof that this function g of z, which solves that the solution of some Riemann boundary value problem, is a martingale.
For this step is just.
So you should check that it's a martingale with respect to one step.
You're observing one step at a time, right?
So we're observing the path that's going from A to Z?
No, the path from A to B. That's what you're.
Well, we're observing the path from A to B.
But then the function.
And we're fixing a Z.
Z.
And we're looking at. We're doing the path from A to B, but we have a function that doesn't depend on B.
Then you divide
G of Z by G of B.
That's it.
What's the
marginal?
What's the
G of Z?
Is that?
Minus G of.
At least I understand what's being claimed. I don't know the proof, but...
What's the index that's increasing in the martingale?
You're conditioning on additional steps in the path from A to C.
This curve.
You look at the first K steps, and then you look at the expectation.
You have a path
GZ
from,
is a function of...
You have a path from A to B, but you're exploring it.
Logical.
Well, in some sense, yes, yeah, but not exactly.
So that would be what I said before, which you said was not correct. You've got a path.
But the thing is that what you define there doesn't know anything about B.
Well, this G of Z not, but we can write G of Z by G, divided by G of B.
By G
neighbor of B. So you have to B enters through normalization. Before that, we don't really have any sort of a martingale.
Right. So you normalize it by G just one step
before. Yeah. Oh, that's nice. I mean, I think this feels similar and similar to that. To this loop erase random walk martingale, where you take the...
You mean the Poisson kernel martingale?
Where you take the...
Yeah, the Poisson kernel.
Normalized to be 1 at 1 point, and 0 along the boundary accepted at 1 point.
It's actually would be exactly the same if you plug in sigma equal to... kappa equal to 2, because you get power 1 here, so you get exactly the Poisson kernel.
And for that loop erase random walk, you may recall there's not a very intuitive argument.
There is an inductive argument which goes
argument,
one step at a time.
Not,
there's a good intuitive heuristic.
Well,
I have not prepared it today in the morning, the good intuitive heuristic.
You just have to verify it, It's not a verification. You understand it when you understand it, but then if I ask you,
I know what the martingale is. I don't even know what the martingale is yet.
Yeah, you do.
Well, here's it's basically the same as there, but you do different boundary value problem for the Poisson kernel, so it's.
So
you use this Riemann boundary value problem from yesterday to get the martingale.
Given a domain at A and B, G of Z is defined, and that depends on Z of X. And I understand what G of Z means.
Yeah. But then we also can define G of B.
G of B, which is just a
partition function. And we can take ratio of 2. And that would be exactly the same what you do for the loop erase random walk. Because what I claim that G of Z is a solution of some, is an analytic solution of some boundary value problem. For loop erase random walk, you have harmonic solution of some boundary value problem. You take ratio of 2 points, you take ratio of 2 points here. And then you have to check step by step that it's martingale with respect to exploration of perimeters in this model.
But G of Z,
it might be that you have to take G of B over G of Z. No, G of Z over G of B. Well, we can discuss it later. I think we already bored many people.
Okay.
No, but even I don't have good hand-waving explanation. But for loop erase random walk, I also don't have a good hand-waving explanation. Or say for harmonic explorer, why this thing is a martingale.
Maybe the discussion for mathematician at an abstract level is perfectly fine, but I would like to see equations written down somewhere. So
equations.
What is a martingale and what is not?
But it's sort of you draw a curve from A to B, and with respect to this filtration, there is something which is martingale, meaning that there is, say, total probability formula that, well, say, like, probability that curve passes above a point is a martingale. If you draw curve, if you do filtration of this curve drawn from left to right. So here, unlike the yesterday's discussion, where yesterday just think by definition immediately was a martingale, because it was defined in terms of our curve. Here it's defined in terms of something as a shape to a model, so it's not immediately clear, you have to actually prove this step by step. And but then if you prove it step by step, you have this function which is conformally covariant because it is analytic and we know the argument on the boundary, and if you check, it will be exactly the derivative of this map to half plane. And if you plug in it into total probability formula, then you will retrieve kappa equal to, well, kappa from that formula. So if you indeed show for some model that this is a martingale and this thing is discrete holomorphic, then after passing to a limit, you will get that it converges to a CLE with a kappa solving that equation. So perhaps this thing is more interesting for a physicist than the discrete considerations. No, we can discuss it later. I'm not sure I...
Well, it's write down an explanation
to Greg, yeah. No, I eventually, of course I will write it eventually, but yeah, so it's... okay. So I don't know, maybe I just want to add a few words about yesterday's thing, because it sort of relates to today's talk in the morning, that it might help to understand how to describe by SLE multiple perimeters or perimeters in more complicated domains. Because essentially everything which we were doing yesterday with the rearrangements, it works equally well on a Riemann surface or on domain with holes.
Sorry, Stas, just one quick question.
So yes.
Compared to yesterday's talk,
yes.
This sticky point which seems to be confusing people, now I'm not sure I understand why it did not exist yesterday.
Ah, because yesterday didn't exist by definition, because yesterday this thing was defined as a probability of some event in my original model. Here it's defined as probability of some event in some associated model. And it's not clear that when we draw the curve in our model, when we draw a curve on this funny thing, it's more or less the same thing. So that's the issue. So it requires actually a short proof. But it's in loop arrays, in one of the proofs for loop arrays random walk, there is exactly the same issue, that it's not clear that the thing which is written is a martingale.
But time illusions in any case is exploration of this curve, right?
Yes.
It's time process.
Yeah.
No, but it's not, because the weight on that curve, given that it gets to C...
It's complex, you mean?
No, not that it's complex. Even if they were real, you don't... It's not weighted by the rest of the curve.
Yeah. No, but theoretically you can say that we just explore the curve to Z.
Yeah.
But is it like has all the condition to go through Z or not?
No,
that's the question. That's what I'm
trying. No, but in a sense, this curve is to define f of Z. It's not. We are not studying this curve. We'll actually be studying a different curve,
yes.
Which will be sort of.
So this curve has weight x to the length, and that's it, times a winding.
No, but this curve, in some sense, is a Fordow SLE. Is a Radow SLE.
Well, yeah.
Probably, at least for kappa smaller than 4.
The point is that if you did say that there was also going to be an extension of the curve from Z to B, then
we cannot do rearrangements.
Then the weights on this curve would be different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, sure. If you condition on that, the weight will be very different. Yeah.
So then this is just
really you're fully entitled to do this, but it's not obvious that it's a martingale, that's all.
Yeah, that's the only thing, yeah. But as it was already mentioned, for loop arrays and the walk, one of the usual martingales, it's also not obvious that it is a martingale.
It's not obvious, but there is a 10-line proof that...
Okay. And for loop arrays and the walk, you already have seen it, so it's obvious.
So for this, B is just an observer of some sense.
Yes, yeah, B is just an observer.
So, okay, so the statement about what is a martingale...
Okay. In some sense, the thing which is sufficient for our purpose is something that this g of z is a martingale when we take z very close to b, some sort of such thing.
We're looking at all configurations, just all configurations going from A to Z, and then all possible leaps.
Yes.
And now we're just taking steps on the discrete thing, and we're saying.
Well, okay. Okay, let me. I want to make some sort of 10 second argument which will convince you. So let me just make 10 second argument which will convince you. So we can consider the very same thing with two points as arguments.
First simple question, are we on the discrete or the continuous?
In the discrete level. Okay. Now let's plug in two points which are neighbors. Then if we plug in two points as neighbors, then it's basically the same as in our model, probability that our curve passed through this thing with certain complex weight. So it's basically the same thing as yesterday. And the only difficult thing is, it's a thing similar to what Kenyon does in his work, that you plug in into Green's function two points nearby, and Green's function theoretically blows up. So it's Z1 plus mesh. And that thing is clearly martingale, that's the same thing as yesterday. So this thing which we had yesterday, it can be derived from the thing today by just taking two points nearby.
But now you have a joint distribution of two curves which avoid it.
That's the joint. But the thing is, the only thing we have to check that the linear relation is okay. And the only sticky point here is that when we lengthen one curve, we can bump into another. So there are some considerations in how you reglue it, but that works perfectly well. So it's.
It's going to be a Green's function. There will be contact terms when the two points come close together. If you try to, it's not separately. If the points are close together, it's not holomorphic in the two lines or stuff.
No. But it's basically the thing which happens here. Well, maybe it's clear that it will work if we write it as the determinant of minus of Castellan matrix, but that's exactly the same thing which Kenyon did for dimer models, because he needs exactly the same probability of dimer in given place, and then you take two points nearby.
Let me just step back up one more time. For the loop race case,
okay.
Something which may not be so easy to check as a martingale, but the statement that it's a martingale is, you're starting by saying that the path is doing the loop race block, and then this is a martingale. Are you sure you're doing an exploration process based on a certain weighting?
It's the O-N model.
So it's the model of, so in other words,
it's not an exploration of the O-N path,
because
the weights
are... Well, okay, let's maybe just so that everyone is happy, we can discuss the details later, but this thing is a martingale. Is it okay with you? G of 2 points.
Maybe we should move on
and... process.
Okay, so this is a martingale with respect to O-N exploration process.
Okay, so process... Okay.
Yeah, well, that's all right, because you have a curve from A to B now.
Yes, yeah.
So you didn't before.
No, but the previous thing, which was one half of it, also is okay. Whatever.
So... teacher reference, if you would prepare in advance the 8-line proof, we won't understand it, but it would get us quiet a lot more quickly.
Sure. But
the statement, I was wondering, not the proof.
8-page statement? Okay, now we have an easier statement.
Okay.
Which gets you quieter faster.
You have something that you've not proved for us yet, but that's fine.
Yeah, that's true, but... Okay, so I don't know whether I should Should I say something about Riemann surfaces and all that, or should I not?
Why don't we take a couple minute breaks?
And then maybe you start asking questions about.
Maybe. We're having enough trouble with simply connected.
But the multiply connected, well, the yesterday's discussion for multiply connected is easier than today's discussion for simply connected.
Well, maybe.
That's fine. That's trivial. It can't be
moved around. I don't know. A break.